Hello, my name is Ramona McKee with QuickToStitch.com.
What's up? It's Jeremy Picker from Amber Creative.
And you are listening to the Two Regular Guys podcast.
Hosted by Terry Combs RG, Regular Guy, and Aaron Montgomery.
The place to be for industry news.
The best dad jokes on earth, along with relevant topics to apparel decorators.
Prepare for the wild.
Welcome into the show. It is Friday, March 22nd, 2024. I'm Terry Combs, and you can find me at terrycombs.com.
And I'm Aaron Montgomery from our Success Group, and my mission is to inspire you to build a business that you love. And I was giggling because I just love that little bit at the end from Vic Patel of Craft Express, prepare for the wow. So now we got to bring it, Terry, prepare for the wow. And we're going to dive into a topic today, a bit of a, you know, controversial is probably not the right word. I'm just trying to hype it up so we have more people tuned in, but we're going to talk about the kind of we'll see. There could be some, some stuff on either side. I probably know what side most people are going to be on. I'm going to be on the other side of it probably. So we're going to talk about kind of the rise of the crafter maker market as we see it in our space, and really, I guess, kind of try to answer as best we can, should the, and we're going to use air quotes here a lot today, professional decorators fear or embrace that rise of the crafter maker market, kind of, I don't know, bleeding into our space might be a way to put that, Terry. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation today.
And there's more and more conversation about this type of thing. So I think, in fact, interestingly enough, I've had two conversations today about this marketplace and people's participation in it. So anxious to grab onto this subject. And we're going to bring Eric in as well. So he'll be producing the show and be the third voice, because he has a lot of experience in this area. So looking forward to having Eric participate again. And make sure that you stay until the very end and get your helping of the secret sauce. Dane Clement, the Two Regular Guys art guy, he's going to be sharing how to upsize raster files. And this is really important for folks using AI to create and other methods where you might have to have a low resolution image. So Dane always has great information, and he's one of us. He is a long time decorator, and he loves to talk about artwork. And you know, as we said, he is now the Two Regular Guys art guy.
We've made it official. We had to take some of Eric's paycheck, but we were able to bring him on. And no,
it's like the NFL. You know, you have to renegotiate contracts because of salary cap, and we have a very, very, very low salary cap here at Toronto.
Very low, extremely low. So no, it's and the thing I love about Dane is he's so passionate about it, and that makes him very thorough. And like you said, he's been around it for so long.
Yeah.
He knows all the tricks, but he's embracing these things too. You know, so he knows where we came from. Like, we needed to start with high res stuff, but he knows the reality is it's not always possible. So I'm excited to hear what he's got to share with us today, Terry. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Yeah. And we've got another wonderful friend of ours joining us here in just one moment. But Cassie from The Apparelist is going to share the news with us this week, Terry. So are you ready to bring Cassie in here?
I'm ready. Let's hear it, Cassie.
Hello, regulators. Thank you so much for again having me to bring you your industry news. Let's get into today's headlines. Rock launches rockdigital.com. Rock International and Rock US announced the unveiling of rockdigital.com, a platform exclusively dedicated to the burgeoning world of digital print. For over four decades, the Rock brand has remained at the forefront of innovation in the printing industry, consistently pushing boundaries and embracing technological advancements, according to a press release from the company. Recognizing the unique workflows and opportunities inherent in digital printing, Rock International and Rock US have collaborated to establish Rock Digital. This dedicated space serves as a comprehensive hub for digital print business owners and operators, offering insights, advanced machinery, personalized support, and other resources. Second headline for everybody today, P&M Apparel, Anatole, to host FlyoverCon. So P&M Apparel and Anatole are hosting a conference on April 18th through the 20th called FlyoverCon. Now, this is going to take place in Polk City, Iowa, and it's designed for apparel decorators. FlyoverCon features expert-led panels and educational sessions on topics like the future of screen printing, lean manufacturing, trends in blanks, and technology from top manufacturers in the industry. There will be live printing, embroidery, and direct-to-film demonstrations, as well as networking opportunities through a happy hour and the meals. Attendees will have several opportunities to receive free swag and exclusive giveaways. Now, I am told space is limited, so early registration is strongly encouraged at www.flyovercon.inc, I-N-K, Inc. The last headline I have for you guys today is sort of a hybrid between headline and story. So here's the main headline. Q&A with Totally Normal Design, Lane 7's South by Southwest Design Contest winner. So here's the headline portion of this. In partnership with Supacolor, Lane 7 Apparel launched the L7 Merch Tour campaign, coinciding with its presence as South by Southwest's official t-shirt sponsor. To get customers involved in the experience, Lane 7 asked them to submit a design to be featured on official tour merch. Among the 20 entries Lane 7 received, one in particular stood out, and then here's the news part of this. Brody Driscoll, owner of Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas-based Totally Normal Design, won the contest with a punk rock-inspired submission. Having won the contest, Driscoll not only received $1,000 to use at Lane 7 Apparel and $500 for Supacolor, but his design was featured on the flash sheet of designs people could choose from during the live print activation at South by Southwest. Here's the article portion of this. My colleague, Ali Bruce, actually set up a Q&A with Brody to just talk about the way he put together his design, what it meant to him to win this contest, and all that good stuff. So if you want a deep dive, click on the link. You'll get both the news piece and the article piece. That's everything I have for you today, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, Cassie always has interesting news for us. Smartest thing that you came up with, Aaron, was getting the folks in the magazines to share the news rather than us digging through press releases before the show.
Well, yeah, what brought that on was I basically went through the messages, right? So I'm signed up for all their newsletters and I get their newsletters all the time. And I just pull from the magazines the stuff on their newsletters. I'm like, why don't we just bring them in here? Because that's where I'm getting it from anyhow. Let's cut the middleman out. So I appreciate that, Terry. I did something smart. Let's mark that down, okay?
It's a fun all one. Right. I enjoy those guys all bringing the news for us.
Yeah, it's I really appreciate them and just all they bring to the industry too. I think that, you know, having people that like Cassie with the Apparelist, where their whole deal is going out there and figuring out what's going on and bringing that stuff to us and being able to share that here is fantastic for the regulators. So we're all in one spot here. So, all right, Terry, it is, I think I kind of took over the dad joke for a couple weeks there and you know, I think people are ready for another Terry dad joke. Are you,
Yeah, you know, and Cassie in the intro where she says the best dad jokes in the world. So I really feel like I raised the bar today. So I
feel like you have too. So let's do it. Dad joke when you're ready.
So Aaron, did you know I've opened a gym where the instructors go door to door to tell people about all the benefits of joining?
Oh, wow. Interesting. What's it called?
Yeah, I call it Jehovah's Fitness. I can't see Eric. What's he doing?
There's a lot of head shaking right now. I think his neck might be sore. We'll ask him when he comes on.
Hopefully it didn't offend anybody.
Wait, possibly
hold on, the door.
Boy, look out.
Yeah, I've offended people. Okay.
Yeah.
before we dive in, we want to thank everybody for checking out the Two Regular Guys podcast. We need your voices still. We'd love to have more regulators on the show doing the intro. So go to decorators.inc/intro and just read a few sentences and be a part of every show. And like we say, we already have a few, but we would love to have more people on the show and in the beginning. And so don't be left out. We are always looking for new guests. So if you or anyone you know would like to join us, go to calendly.com/2 regular guys to book a future episode. Or you can email us at info@2regularguys.com with your show ideas. If you are listening to the podcast version of the show, we would appreciate you sharing the Two Regular Guys podcast with all of your industry friends so they can become regulators too. We would appreciate you giving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Podcasts, YouTube Podcast, wherever you do your podcast listening. We are there. And if you're watching us live right now, please join in with your comments on this subject.
Yeah, indeed. Looking forward to hearing from all of you guys and get out there and share this episode with your friends so they can become regulators too. I think, Terry, you've gotten so darn good at that little section right there. I'm going to have to go in and like just change some things just to
change some words.
Let's see if we can do the Ron Burgundy thing.
I've got my tissue because I was outside and it's really windy and there's an evil cocktail of Phoenix dust and pollen that permeated my face.
So is that different from the normal cocktails that you have?
It is much different.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to clarify the level of cocktail that you're talking about. All right. Well, Terry, we've got some great ground to cover here. I do think that this is going to be an interesting topic. We might all just kind of fall in different areas here and it becomes a little bit of a versus thing, but I think really just kind of really digging into some depth as to, as a quote unquote professional decorator, somebody that, really is in this has been in this, I think a lot of the people you're probably hearing from are folks that have been in business for a while and are seeing this kind of influx. Does that sound right? So,
exactly.
What does that mean for us as an industry? So like you said, we need to welcome Eric back onto the program here because Eric does have a pretty good extensive, he's played in a lot of these ponds that kind of cross over, right? Yeah. So Eric, why don't you welcome yourself into the show here, please?
I can put myself in the right spot. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. So there we go. Yeah. So yeah, Eric.
No, I have to agree to you. Yeah. I have been able to do a lot of cross pollination. And frankly, I think the only thing that's going to be hard is people kind of know my stance on this one, which is that I've fought for bringing people in, but trying to make everybody good stewards of this craft that we do. So bringing people in with education, but I tend to be pretty anti-gatekeeping. I always have been. Ever since when I first started teaching, there were a couple of old school digitizers who are like, man, you are giving up the bag. What are you doing? We don't want you to share the secrets. Why are you teaching everybody this stuff? And a good portion of it was, and as I often have told folks, I learned on my own at first, entirely on my own.
Yeah.
And number one, hey, you guys weren't there when I needed somebody to teach me. So I learned and shared because that's what I thought was the right thing to do. Yeah. Number two, I would like to see more people do good work. Whereas what's the biggest complaint you ever hear about people getting $5 digitizing from somewhere is that it's not done well. Yeah. I'm like, well, if we want people to do good work and charge well, we got to bring them in, but then educate them and foster them in to that commercial world that we want to build. You know, whatever we want that world to look like, best thing we can do, in my opinion, is foster people, bring them in.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're saying is, hey, now that I'm in the club, close the door behind me, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially as we all get a little older, and I mean, not to speak on the gray in my beard anymore, but... we expect there to be someone else to take over this thing someday. I think maybe just shutting everybody.
So come in for some cookies, not get off my lawn, you crafters.
That's kind of how I am. I'll just say that's me for sure. Plus we'll have to have this discussion. I know I'm jumping the gun because I am in the middle of this discussion a lot. But we do have to have the discussion of what do you mean when you say commercial experience. I think it might be the problem of more people who are being disrupted feel that, and I understand that fully. Yeah. But hey, we have to talk about vendors too, and I know we're going to get there, but there's a lot of our vendors who are marketing in that market too. So it's not just they're not just coming out of nowhere, folks. There's a system that's bringing people into. We have to decide how we want to react because they're going to be here whether you feel entirely cool with it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think more in the last year or so have we seen vendors turn around going, wait a minute, who are these guys? What is this new market we're talking about here?
The canny ones, folks? It's been years. Yeah, the canny vendors have known for quite some time.
Well, so let me ask the first question here. So what's the difference in a crafter and a maker? Any thoughts on that? And let me just add, one source said to me, I think there's more glue involved in crafting.
Eric, you start us off here then, please.
Okay, I'll do that. I thought you had something else to go on, Aaron, but I'll take this first. Why not?
Okay, all right.
Sure. Crafters and makers, I think here's the thing. Whatever category we're talking about, I don't know that a crafter or a maker makes much difference. When I'm out there talking, people have this concept of makers are making something useful, or they're, you know, really trying to get into the deep engineering, where a crafter might be just enjoying themselves. It's a hobby, and it's literally for you know, to please yourself, to have your own, you know, thing to do with your time that you enjoy. I think that's probably a good distinction. The thing is, in a world where we are never far from selling things and people understand merch, and in a world where there's a scale from selling one thing on eBay to starting an Etsy store to going to a craft, you know, a craft show in your neighborhood and selling it to doing that regularly, trying to segment this all off from what's commercial and not is actually harder for me than trying to find out, you know, what crafters and makers are. Certainly when I hear maker, though, admittedly, my brain goes to the kind of flourishing that aughts flourishing of maker spaces and 3D printing and milling and CNC, where people were kind of getting together and doing this kind of collective, you know, making thing, which it doesn't really necessarily go out to where we go. But I'm going to tell you, maker spaces are one of the places where I've helped put software. So I know that maker spaces are getting into embroidery and screen printing and not just, you know, 3D printing and CNC and all that. So it can be across that board. I think the funny thing is, no matter where you look, we are part of that. Our, at least the technologies we use are going to be present in all spectrums, especially with the rise of low cost, easy to use machines and supplies for everything that we do.
Yeah.
Which is only becoming more ubiquitous.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's probably not much of a distinction between the crafter and the maker. I think, you know, a maker is probably somebody that is a little more kind of, like you said, from scratch, where a crafter is, you know, kind of following a pattern. Sure. I think that might be the only real distinction. But honestly, I think both of them in my mind fall into that kind of category of hobbyist, where okay, I'm just going to make this thing because I feel like it or I want to, or I'm going to, you know, create this craft. And there's no real kind of process, right? It's not a repeatable process kind of over and over again. And maybe that's where we start getting into the distinctions in the categories between professional, commercial, whatever you want to call it there, to this more hobbyist, crafter, maker kind of thing. So,
Eric, there's the same range in professional, and you're right. A lot of air quotes here for our podcast listeners. Among the professionals, I mean, there's somebody who says, well, yeah, this is my business. I did $50,000 in sales last year. And the next person you talk to says, yeah, you know, of course I'm a professional. I did $50 million in sales last year. I mean, who is the more professional? I mean,
for sure. I mean, and you could look at like screen printing, right? You could be like, yeah, I'm a professional and I've got, you know, a 16 color automatic. I'm a professional that has a one head, you know, one station that I built myself, but I'm doing this as a business. Right. And so again, that there's a lot of gray in there. I mean, you can look at that in any of the decorating techniques. I mean, sublimators, okay, I've got a third party ink system, versus a, you know, 6,400 inch with a drum calendar press, right? Yeah. Again, they're all quote unquote, more air quotes. I was going to leave my hands up here. I think it'll be easier. professional at what they're doing and what they're, you know, so yeah, I think it's interesting to kind of look at some of these categories, but probably not really crucial, I guess. The next kind of area to touch on that's in this similar vein is, okay, so we're trying to kind of talk about the difference between crafter and maker, but how do we kind of really have some distinction between, you know, Eric, what you were talking about, commercial versus maybe a hobbyist, or, you know, because I know you've got another term you love to use, prosumer.
Prosumer, right? Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So I think it's because we're actually graphing this on two axes. And I know here Eric goes trying to make this thing too complicated, but you brought me on. You knew what you were getting.
This is our own doing. So we're
so good. Here are the two axes we're working on are this for me. The level of technical knowledge and understanding, because that's one of the things we hear complaints about. People are saying, oh, they're coming over here and they're using stupid materials. They're making it with this press I don't think is worthwhile. They're got a single needle home brewing machine. That's one of the things people kind of stigmatize into the craft world for, is using those level of products. And then on the other graph, I'm going to say we have how commercial you are. And commercial, let's break it down to the definition of commercial. Are you doing commerce? Are you doing business? And are you doing that in a serious way? Are you depending on it for your livelihood? Is where we would say, if we have two ends of that spectrum, we have somebody who's doing a little bit of, they're selling occasional things for fun to literally to fund their hobby, or to recoup some material costs, maybe all that they're doing. Or we have somebody who is building a business, and they, and very likely multiple people, are now depending on that livelihood. And that's on the commercial scale. And then on the other scale, we have how much technical skill you have. And that can be anywhere from, don't know much, following some tutorials on YouTube, and I'm getting enough done for it to work, to someone who is deeply into it. I know in one of the screen printing places that I worked, we had a guy who had gone to one of the few universities you can get a screen printing degree, and he was incredible. But also, he was a pressman, very much like the rest of our pressmen at the end of the day. But he had incredible technical knowledge, incredible depth. The thing is, if we look at those scales, sometimes I want to go, all right, so how about somebody who is a promotional products person who knows a fair amount about everything, but doesn't have any deep knowledge of printing or embroidery for themselves, but knows how to order it and speak the language, but they're absolutely relying on it for their well-being and their livelihood. They're way high on the commercial scale and kind of low on the individual technical scale of the print or the decoration they're doing. Are they not commercial? Nobody would ever say that. So I think the funny thing is, we're kind of dealing with a cloud of people who fall on this graph and trying to figure out what we feel about it. I think most of the time we probably have more commonality than we'd like to imagine. And I'll even say in the commercial world, the other thing is, people, whether they're saying it or not, one of the complaints is, I have to spend this much money for it to operate, and it's this much work for me to be commercial, or I have the building that's this big that I'm maintaining, but you're working at home, or you make six figures and I make, you know, nine. Yes, those people now. Yes, that's a massive scale of economy there, but people do look at that. And I think that's the other separation we're looking at. But what it often seems to me to be is like, hey, I feel like I paid my dues and you didn't, is the one that I hear a lot. It's like because I was commercial from the beginning, or what have you, or I'm dealing with things that you wouldn't understand because I've got so much volume or so much technical experience, whatever it is. My problem is, I've totally seen people who are on the absolute low end of the commercial spectrum who have incredible deep technical knowledge and sometimes very expensive equipment. And that's closer to what you were talking about, those prosumers. You have people who are just, they're working with equipment that is on the edge of what we use, but it's put out, made to be for a consumer, but it's absolutely close enough for, you know, horseshoes and hand grenades to the professional stuff we're using. And they sometimes have very deep knowledge of the decoration technology. I think that's why we get in trouble with this thing, is that we're actually talking about like three or four different categorizations of what's going on.
And you know, it's not like this is new. And, you know, Eric, as you were talking, it reminded me of something that Aaron and I heard 19 years ago, over and over again, as we made our rounds to trade show with the first DTG machine. And the screen printers were walking up going, wait a minute, I spent 20 years learning to be an expert screen printer, and all you have to do is put the shirt in that little box there and push the button. All of my 20 years is for nothing. You're like, no, calm down. It's not for nothing. Okay. This is the same thing, that the same conversation today that people are having about Cricut moms as they had back then when they saw, DTG is going to take over the industry. There were plenty of people on the other side of the industry. Scott Fresner, who owned the T-Jet line, was telling people screen printing is dead. It's gone forever. So we've been down that road many times talking about, it's not disappearing. It's not going away. But, I think part of this also, and I don't know why there have to be distinctions, but I think just like you said, Eric Crafter, I'm doing this, I'm doing this for myself. I'm doing this for my family. Then all of a sudden you have the person who describes themselves as having a side gig or a part-time business. And it, for all of us, we perceive that to be, so you get a day job, but you also have a business. And I think it's just, I don't know, semantics, but I think that differentiates it for people that I don't think that the, professional, air quotes, everybody out there, podcast line.
Again. I don't think
that the professional looks down their nose as much at somebody that says I have a side gig as somebody that says I'm a crafter.
Yeah. Or a maker. Right. Yeah.
Or a maker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can be.
I think the other interesting part, right? Eric talked about this a little bit ago, and maybe I'm getting ahead of the outline of hair here, but it is that they're going to bring something, they're going to put something out that's going to look bad on the industry as a whole. I think that's where a lot of this kind of why we have to then categorize them, because then we go, that was just a crafter. Don't worry about that. I'm here we go, air quotes for podcast land. I'm professional. Yeah, I do this for a living, and we know what we're doing, right? Because like, here's an interesting, I'll put this, see if everybody can see it here.
Yeah.
Put it up on there, right? This is a picture I took at Joanne's Fabric of a 20-ounce sublimation tumbler. And for those of you in podcast world, that is a black tumbler, right? There is no white patch on this. That white patch you see behind it is just the backside of the label. So I'll take that down. And they're touting this as a sublimation tumbler. And so I'm like, okay, maybe it's a color changing one. So I'm in there in Joanne's. I'm breathing on it. I'm like, breathing on it. People are looking at me like, what the hell is wrong with that guy? Nope, not color changing. So, so somebody's going, okay, well, I'm doing sublimation and this is what they give them. Right. And so, I can see that. Or like you said, we've already brought up the Cricut mom, so we're just going to keep that rolling. They used some vinyl that's not all that great, or they didn't adhere it appropriately, and it washes off the first time, and now all vinyl decoration's bad. Or the people doing sublimation that don't really know the proper times and temperatures and pressures, and so it doesn't look exactly right. So I think when we start talking about those distinctions, so I guess let's lead into that then here real quick. Why are we having this discussion, right? Why are air quotes again? Why is there this fear of this? And we say influx. I'm not sure that it's really an influx. I think it's just probably more that we're seeing it more, right? They're ramping up faster because of the digital equipment.
And there's 10,000 TikTok people out there showing you how they decorate mugs and people
and half of them are wrong. In the trance. I watch those and I'm like, oh my God, please stop. Anyhow, go ahead.
I do have a comment about what you were just saying too. The crafters makers have not cornered the market on producing crappy product. Plenty of professional decorators out there that also produce crappy products. So
yes,
100%. Let's not say the day you get your label as professional, you really know what you're doing, because maybe you don't.
Sure. So why is this discussion happening, right? Why is there this fear of the Cricut mom or Terry, I like what you put in the outline there. Cricket warrior.
Well, and you know, that was that came from a phone message I got from someone who had called and said, well, would you like me to have Terry call you back? No, I'm just calling to complain because Epson's coming out with that new F1070, that little desktop DTG printer. So every Cricket warrior is now going to be competing with me. So I had to make note of that. But, you know, here's my feeling on that. And that's just, you know, I tell people in my screen printing classes that, you know, the beauty of screen printing is you could start a professional business for $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah.
The curse of screen printing is your neighbor can start a professional business for $15,000 or $20,000.
Yeah.
I've been talking about that in my classes for 20 years. And I said, you can't fear those folks. You know, you just have to. Are you ready? Do good work, deliver on time. Do good work, deliver on time.
Well, I hate to say this.
If you think that those people are going to be more competition for you and it's going to destroy your business, your issue is not these competitors entering the marketplace.
You are so right.
Yeah.
You are so right. I know this sounds terrible. It's like we can't have it both ways either. It's something I've said to people about, and I will leave politics out of it, but people talk about whoever the opposing figure from their political stance is both a mastermind who's making the world fall to pieces and a complete idiot. And I'm always telling people, you can't have both. They can't be organizing the New World Order and a complete dolt at the same time. And I think this is the same thing with this competition fear. If you are so much better than them and all their product is junk and nothing they do is worthwhile, well, then what are you afraid of? You can outcompete, outmessage them no matter what. If another commercial shop down the road did trash work, you would say that. Maybe not directly like that, but you'd say their work was subpar and that we're better and you'd have no problem selling against them. Why would you have a problem with that with a crafter coming into the market? On the other side, if they are, you know, like that's the thing, if they are then, you know, incredible and they're getting some break with cheap equipment that you didn't get, buy some of that cheap equipment and use it if that's what you think is going to make your business better. Oh, wait, there's advantages to your equipment that you already have? Well, then play to those advantages. And frankly, I'm just going to put it down to the thing we've been hearing from like every person, including myself, including us, about business. We're usually spending 80% of our time on these people who are not staying with us, who are bargain shopping. And what we really want to do is spend more time on the 20% who pay the most. The people who are going to be swayed by the lady down the road does Cricut, the guy down the road has an embroidery machine and he's going to do it for me for this. They're people who would go to anyone for the deal if they went under your prices.
Yeah.
That's not the client you want the most. It's not likely to be the client that's, you know, going to make or break you because they probably aren't producing a tremendous amount of volume. And honestly, when we've dealt with that in kind of my professional life, if you take too many of those clients on, you slowly bleed yourself. They are bargain shoppers. They drive the race to the bottom. Yeah. So in this whole thing, I'm like, I just don't see that being a serious problem. I think I'll get with the argument that, because we've had this before where somebody has come to me and says, I just don't want embroidery because it's always bad. And you ask them, like, where have you been getting your embroidery done? It's like, well, you know, my cousin got a machine and he's been trying to get it right and I can never get it right. So I just came to you guys for printing. And I'm like, trust me, we do embroidery every day that works if you want. But then the first thing I do is go, let me show you some samples. They see the samples and they either like it or they don't. And we sell them. If you can't take that step to message why you're better than anybody, let alone a crafter down the road, you're right. That's not the crafter's problem. That's your problem.
Yeah. The interesting, but I've been doing this pricing seminar for the last couple of weeks here and having a lot of discussion about the pricing pressure because I get it, right? That pricing pressure is real right now. We've got everything going up in cost and therefore everybody wanting things cheaper, right? And so there is this pricing pressure there.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, the thing that I've landed on, which is exactly what you were saying there, Eric, is it's not about if price is the lowest common denominator, then you're in trouble, right? So it's really not about that. The pricing pressure is more about, how are you sharing your value? What makes you unique, right? Why do your customers buy from you? And then lean into that super heavy, because if there is somebody that shows up that is willing to go at a lower price for a little while, right, until they run out of business, until they put themselves out of business, then your job is to lean into your values and just keep people, you know, don't give those people a reason to go shop somewhere else. Because at the end of the day, your customer doesn't care how big the check is, as long as they get the value that they believe they're giving to you on that check.
Yeah.
And so, you're
exactly right.
You know, it, like why somebody will spend, you know, why does my kid need a $300 pair of Nike shoes? He finds value in that. It equates to value for him, where it drives me absolutely bonkers because I don't care about shoes, right? You know, but that's the same thing with your buyers, right? What they care about has very little to do with the price. It has everything to do with how they perceive your product and service. So,
Aaron, how many bowling balls do you own?
Just three. The other two I had cracked in the heat of Phoenix. So I'm down to three.
I'm just saying, because that was a value to you.
Exactly. No, you're 100% right. Because my bowling balls were not the cheap plastic ones off the shelf either. So I probably could have bought a couple of those shoes with a couple of them. Don't tell my son. Hopefully he's not listening.
Exactly. So I guess what we're saying is that fear of the bottom feeder pricing that they're going to cause is unfounded. And again, it's been around forever. There have always been those folks that come in and nickel and dime below you. And my reaction to that is, I don't care. You know, you're not taking away the customer that I want. So knock yourself out.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you guys from my experience, the crafters in our area were always higher because their material costs are higher. Their equipment usually, I mean, especially you want to talk about in the printing, we all know that a desktop level printer, sublimation, you know, DTF, whatever it is, always the consumables will cost more than the wide format than the commercial version. Their commercial and the ability
to produce any kind of volume is negligible.
And generally, their equipment is slower. It's slower and it costs more, meaning that most of the time, this time they spend, unless they just don't pay themselves anything for labor and profit. And that's the danger. That's where they are cutting themselves off. But there are very few people who come into this thing thinking, I'm going to have my side hustle, who watch it lose money and don't bail. Where does all this used equipment come from, guys? I mean, it's from people who did it, who weren't passionate, and they were only doing it as a side hustle. And they bow out when it doesn't work and they can't make the money back. The people who are passionate, who keep doing it for free, you're not going to stop them, but they're also not really your competition. They just aren't. They're not in the same segment as someone who's running a real commercial shop, even of a very small size.
Yeah. And this is really important to me because, when they are undercutting you, they're not charging for their time. They're not charging for their value. And yes, they can sustain that for a little while on the passion of it, but it will only be short lived, right? And so the customers that bounce are going to come back to you and their prices will go up, right? I mean, it's like, hey, okay, cool. You tried that out. Well, now you couldn't get that project because they were so overwhelmed because they weren't charging enough for their time and they couldn't get things done on time. What did Terry say? Do good work. And what was the second thing?
Deliver on time.
They're not delivering on time. So you need this tomorrow. Okay, well, guess what? I can do it tomorrow, but it's going to cost you double now or whatever, right? So don't worry about those folks that aren't charging for their time. They will go out of business at a certain, because they're going to be overwhelmed and they're not going to be getting anywhere. And they can only sustain that for so long before that whole hustle and grind, because they have to still go to their day job too, right? And so at what point do they just throw up their hands and go, okay, I only spent a couple $100 on this equipment anyways,
I'm out.
They're gonna walk away a lot quicker than somebody else.
Frankly, we used to foster these really symbiotic relations with them, where they would bring us orders that would close them down because it was too much for them to handle, because they knew we would do production. We would do deals with them, and then we would get to the holidays where we were doing a million stocking names. And for a large production company, it didn't make sense for us to be doing names on the top of stockings all the time. Even if we charged enough for it, it was just a lot of hassle and moving around individualized garments that have to be tracked. and a lot of like family heirlooms in your shop. For us, we're like, hey, we got somebody who does this every night when they get home, and they would love to put three names on these stocking tops for you. And here's this person's name. It doesn't have to be a problem if we don't want to make it a problem.
Sure.
And frankly, if somebody does become canny enough to do real business and charge correctly, they're just another one of your commercial competitors now. And yes, they're of a different size or a different market, but what then makes them different from the commercial competitor if they're canny? I'm going to boil this up quickly, so I know we're running a little longer. We probably intended to, and I knew we were going to. But I think a lot of this is precipitated upon the interactions we have online. And I'm going to tell you, this is something that I don't think is unique to crafters, because I have had plenty of dyed-in-the-wool people who either start a shop or buy their way into a shop or decide they're doing this completely as a commercial venture who have this same attitude. It's when people come into a group of professionals, let's say it's a Facebook group. It's back in the days, it was boards and email groups. Since then, it's been Facebook groups and online experiences, Discord channels, whatever it may be. Somebody will come in and with no information, just go, someone teach me how to digitize and embroider this thing. I've got a cap order for this weekend. And you're like, so you bought your equipment, you bought your software, you didn't think at all about how you're going to get this done. And now you want us to pretty much do your homework for you. That's annoying. And I think a lot of professionals think, I had to learn this. I had to work. I went to classes. I've been to the expos. I've been to, you know, DAX. I've been to GPX, whatever. And I'm sitting here learning all this stuff. You want to walk in and you want me to hand you my pricing list and to do some of the digitizing work for you and to tell you what the tension should be and what threads to use and what backing to use. And you don't want to pay anything for that. You don't want to ask nicely. I think a lot of that attitude, and trust me, I've had that from sure sometimes as crafters. A lot of times it's also people who just start up into the game and kind of just don't realize that kind of attitude is not very favorable in those groups. And I think that's where some of this annoyance comes from. It's this concept that you weren't willing to put in the work. Yeah. But I'm going to say there's no one, once again, like bad work, no one's got a corner on that. People with poor attitudes come from all sorts of backgrounds.
Yeah. Well, all right. I know we said we were running behind and that, you know, but now we know why we always go into bonus time, because I've got one more thing that I think is really important here. If you're somebody that considers yourself I'm going to use air quotes again, professional, and you have ever answered someone on a Facebook group forum or wherever when they ask, how much should I charge for this? And you say, multiply times three or times two or dollar per thousand stitch, you have just created this thing that you fear or don't want, because they're going to go and do that times their little blank cost. They're not going to charge for their time, for their value. And so if we could all just stop doing that, I mean, I see it every day. I cannot believe it that still I say this to everybody and I still see it every day. Somebody going, oh yeah, just multiply times two or times three. Right.
So you still price it. Go for it.
Yeah.
Aaron, calm down a little bit, because if you're telling people out there on the internet to stop telling people dumb things, what am I going to talk about in my seminars?
You're going to have to rename your seminars. Here's a couple of dumb things I've seen on the internet because Aaron finally got him to stop. I don't think it's ever going to happen. You'll be fine, Terry. Don't worry.
Honestly, there's always going to be somebody to say something or to trivialize something or to give an off the cuff answer. I jump into digitizing stuff way more than I should, embroidery stuff way more than I should, because I've watched five people say contrary answers and I stop and then explain it in depth. And I'm like, man, I probably, but at the same time, I stop and go, well, if that sticks, anybody who read the answer I gave them is one that's time tested, that I can point to my samples, I can point to the receipts and say, I know it works. And if someone listened, then I've probably made some people who are going to make better work and who are going to be good stewards. But that's also why we should take the time to explain things and teach and do all things that, like, we're always advocating for all of our people out here. I'm like, you think the young people coming up don't know what they're doing? Scare quotes again. cool. You know what? That's a great reason for you to get out and teach. Yeah. And exactly somehow we just still don't see all of them on the circuit teaching, do we? But suffice it to say, it's like, if we want good stewards, we have to decide what does it mean to be a good member of this community? And then, you know, what are we going to do to make that happen? How are we going to foster that? If there's no opportunity for them to come in a good way, then of course they're going to come in whatever way they want. We didn't stop when we were young doing this. They're not going to stop now. And honestly, I think if we talk about our horror stories, quote unquote, once again, with crafters, I think by far I have more good stories. In fact, yeah. The great thing I'm seeing is more people serving customers that wouldn't be served unless there was someone out there who knew the niche. That's the crazy thing. People who do things that I never thought of as businesses who are making money. And especially a lot of people serving these very, very boutique niche markets that we kind of can't expect the traditional commercial shop to service very well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm giggling because A, I just looked at the time, and B, I thought about the time when Eric said, okay, it'll be quick because I know we're getting overtime. And I Terry's barely said three words, so we're in big trouble.
I think we probably are going to have to part two this mess.
Who knows? All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a quick break then so we can regroup and see if we get ourselves on track. And We'll hear a little bit about my upcoming event on June 7th and 8th in O'Fallon, Missouri. And then we will come back and dig a little bit more into this. Does that sound good, guys?
Sounds good.
Here we go.
Are you overwhelmed? Is work-life balance a problem? Are you stuck trying to figure out what to do to grow your small business? Or are you just afraid or feeling alone? The secret to overcoming it all is a strong foundation.
My name's Aaron Montgomery. I'm the author of the Fundamentals of Business Success book, and I'm invested in helping people work on their businesses, not just in them. The fundamentals are essential for lasting, fulfilling success.
Think of the fundamentals like a treasure map with special tools. It shows you where to go so you don't get lost, saving you time and money. This foundation is your plan and your belief system that keeps you going. It's about taking small, consistent steps every day, building up over time to reach your goals.
You might be searching for success without knowing where to start, but we know this foundation works. Aaron is here to guide you in creating your own treasure map. We are ready to invest in you. Are you ready to invest in yourself?
Sign up today for this one-of-a-kind live event. You will leave with a clear purpose, strategies to achieve your goals, a custom action plan, time management mastery, and the courage to conquer fear. Are you ready to invest in yourself? You deserve the support your business needs. Sign up now for one of the limited number of seats.
All right. Well, thank you guys for checking that out. And love, if anybody has any questions, please reach out to me, and happy to share. And I think this is going to be a really valuable time for you to really build that business foundation that your business deserves. So hopefully you are willing to invest in yourself. But Terry, let's get back into this here. We've got a few things left to cover, and a short time to get there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about from the vendor perspective, because I talk to not only to end users, but I talk to a lot of vendors as well. So I'm talking about the people who sell equipment, the people who sell garments, the people who sell the supplies. So first of all, what are the drawbacks? What are the benefits? I'm going to say why the sudden interest in this sector, and probably that's probably not the right term. It should
just use air quotes, Terry. Just use air quotes.
Air quotes. So it better be said is, why are there more and more vendors that are taking notice of the of this market, this crafter, this maker marketplace, even to the point of the side gig people. I'm going to group them together. I mean, why the new interest? What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Eric.
Can you hear me grinding my teeth trying to answer the question fast? I'm going to put this down to commerce again, because there is a tremendous market and the money is there. I, having been on both sides of this market, here's the thing I've always told people, and it's the not nice way and the nice way kind of go together. How many commercial decorators are there? Traditional commercial decorators, especially in the States, who are decorating locally. Even if we have an estimate, and I'm not even going to try and talk about the estimate, if we talk about those people and then we say, all right, how many crafters do you think make some things every month in their homes? And the number is, it's an order of magnitude. It's a tremendous number of people who are crafting and who are doing side gigs, or who are somewhere in the middle of that. And at scale, and understanding what we've already discussed, which is that low volume orders and producing these things or providing them through channels where people can buy at a quasi retail level, they're getting higher markups per piece. So they're making higher margin over the course of a large number of orders. Now, if they're okay with handling that, the problem is some people don't like it because they're handling more individual orders and shipping, and there's a lot of logistics involved. But yeah, especially when these vendors can partner with other people that handle more of the logistics side of it, there's not a ton of downside. They're making a product that has, yes, a very large market, but the market might be slightly limited. If you could suddenly, you know, 100x or more that market and then, you know, charge more per piece, yes, they're not ordering thousands at a time. Even if we really are honest about some of the shops that we've been in or worked on, the minimum orders that we do these days are nowhere near like they used to be even when I started.
Sure. Yeah.
The difference isn't quite so high as you might think. And honestly, there's just a tremendous number of people who want to be served in this market, who want to make their own stuff. And they're out there willing to pay quite a bit more per piece for it. It's a numbers game. People have noticed that if they get out there and they hit correctly and get the market right, even though there's competition, there's churn out in that market, they're bound to make money.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how many equipment people, garment people, supplies people, went into the office on a Monday and said, have any of you been to Kohl's? Have you seen those stacks of crickets? And they're like in every other cart going out, checking out. Well, what's going on here? Are we touching that market? And so, I mean, it struck me when I was in there and I saw those just stacks of crickets and thinking, man, that's a lot of people who are getting a taste of the marketplace. And I'll tell you a little story, if that's okay. I'll keep it brief. Not like Eric brief, really brief.
Sure. Actually brief. Your stories are always very short.
Yeah. Years ago, there was a gentleman that, well, he still works at Workhorse Products. Mm-hmm. And he said to me one time, you know, Terry, you know what the Michaels, those you-dos, you guys remember you-dos?
Mm-hmm. These little screen print machines.
That's like Speedball also. Little screen printing deals. He goes, man, I love those you-dos. I'm like, why? He goes, because every 100 people that buy one of those, one of them goes, man, this is cool. I want to do this for real. 100%. And he goes, then that's my future customer. So I think there's a lot to be said for that people, I mean, you know, I started as a side gig and loved it and, you know, cruised from there. There are lots and lots. And I talk and, you know, I guess maybe you guys don't see maybe as many as I do, but in my screen printing classes, most of them have day jobs and they're there. Oh, and hey, I just think this is cool. I screen printed in high school or I want to print for this, or I have this idea and it starts from nothing. And, you know, next thing you know, I run into these folks years later, some of them in multi-million dollar decorating businesses. And that's the inspiration that I share with my classes. You know, there are people who sat where you're sitting 8-10 years ago that are right now running, you know, 60 heads of embroidery, and they've got 5 automatic screen printing presses and they're doing direct to film. And so it's all there, you know, it starts here. And for the folks that are out there in the craft or maker marketplace, you know, it starts here. How many of you are going to say, you know, this is really cool? And that's the beauty of our industry. That's why we all stay. This is really cool, you know? And well, so I think it's, well, and Eric, I think you said that it's the future of the market. And I keep saying I'm getting out, but, you know, someday I will. Whether my choice or not.
He has to leave. Same.
But anyway, that's kind of my take on it.
Terry, can you also kind of what when you talk about from the vendor's perspective here, right? And I know you're obviously pretty tuned in with that, right? What are, you know, we talked about the benefits, the potential market, the you know, opportunities there. And I think maybe one of the benefits that wasn't discussed is they're also willing to pay a little bit more, right? So your margins are higher. You might not have as big of an order size, but your overall margins are going to be larger because, you know, smaller orders, your margins should be a little higher. And I guess vendors have gotten a lot better at looking at their bottom line. I think for a long time, for a lot of distributors or equipment folks or supply people, things like that, I don't know, it was almost probably ego, right? I want that big order to, because I'm the guy that's getting the big order. But the reality is a bunch of those little small orders can be more profitable than, you know, a few big orders. But what about some drawbacks, Terry?
Well, I think the biggest concern for me is a lot more handholding. You know, I talk to folks all the time. They go, well, so you have to pre-treat. What is that? What is? And so, you know, that conversation that's 5 minutes with somebody that already understands the marketplace, it turns into an hour of you explaining the entire process. And you know me, I'll sit there and explain the entire process to them. But so I think that's a fear for vendors.
Just point is them to that one of these I'm episodes.
Gonna get, this person's going to call me every day and ask me sometimes the same question, you know? So,
and I think that's important to note when you're talking about like the guy who called you to gripe about the, what is it? F1070 you said?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like how many of those questions, well, what's pre-treat, right? And how long is it going to take them to figure out that they need to pre-treat, right? So how many shirts are they going to have ruined by the time they've call you and ask, right? So that gripe, I think, but like you said, it, from a vendor perspective, you got to be prepared for that. That's part of that, why you need to make a little extra margin in there, is because you're going to have to spend that time and labor to do a little bit more education than you would with a, here comes the air quotes again, professional buyer.
Well, hence the rise of the vendor driven education. How many vendors have YouTube channels full of this stuff? How many vendors are putting out materials? I think that's how they figured it out. It's like, and funny thing is we started to understand with the internet and the communications we have these abilities to do more, to scale up how many people we can serve. If we start to use those tools in a really, you know, adequate manner for that, and to get people on that journey in such a way that they can self-serve to some degree on support, I think that a lot of vendors have figured it out. You know, they've made it work, and it's just, it's accepting where people are. And then like Aaron said, preparing for it, you know, making sure you know what's coming.
Yeah. I think the other thing to note though, is if you think that that's going to be enough, right, to just do some YouTube videos. I mean, I talked to several people in Minnesota that were griping about some of the vendors not being there because they wanted to have the conversation with them. They wanted to like understand a little bit more. Like they call support and they go, well, did you watch the video? Yes, but I still don't know how to do this thing, right? I need to talk to somebody. Why can't I get anybody on the phone, right? And so that's going to be there if you really want to provide customer service. But yes, having that, you know, like you said, self-serve, it will definitely get you a lot further there. So
and like the ambassador groups for different companies this person really gets it. How would you like to be an ambassador for the company and do some Facebook group or in exchange, you know, I'm going to sell your supplies at half price or whatever. And and I'm not saying that's how they all are. I'm sure that some of them get paid or some of them get other benefits. Yeah. And a lot of folks,
Lori Donovan from Sawgrass, like, is a perfect.
I
was just trying to, you mentioned the ambassadors, right? If you want an example of that, we've had her on the show, Lori Donovan, who runs that Sawgrass. Yeah, cool. Yeah, perfect. Love that. Perfect. All right. Terry, what else is a potential drawback for vendors here if they're looking at this marketplace?
Well, that's probably the biggie for me. The other part is not so much the end users, but how do you find them? And I was telling you guys, I've been talking to people for actually the last couple of weeks about this scenario, and that's where the thought came about this doing this show. But people saying, well, I've got 100,000 people on my mailing list. Not one of those, if they're already on your mailing list, not one of those people is that customer. And you know, Aaron, what I thought of is when you were emceeing that group at Graphics Pro Expo, where it was all startups, right?
Yeah. And Start Here Academy.
Like that, I thought, man, that is the perfect scenario. And I remember you saying how many hundreds of people were there. Thought, oh man, that That's a market that nobody has figured out how to reach other than apparently Graphics Pro Expo.
Well, and the way they figured out how to reach it was through these influencers, right? You've got the crafter groups. You mentioned TikTok and how many people are showing people how to do it wrong on TikTok, but yet that's where their following is, right? And so, you know, I'm not saying that these particular folks were telling people to do it wrong, but I'm not saying they were telling people to do it right either in certain scenarios. So we've had them on the show, so gotta tread lightly. But I mean, the reality is, yeah, it's going to be completely different from what you're used to, right? Your 100,000 email list is not going to do it. If you want to go after that, you do have to do things differently. You have to be willing to bring somebody in or have somebody in your business that is going to be that quote unquote, air quotes again, influencer and go from there. So Eric, any other thoughts there?
No, I think it makes sense. I think the other thing is that most of us need to probably look for partnership, whether it's with brands or supply creators or wherever it may be, where somebody is already in the space. And honestly, Terry, you hit the nail on the head. If you see somebody doing that, you see one of these groups who are starting this stuff up where there's a likelihood of that kind of market being there, offering to sponsor some of it in order to get in front of them is a good idea. Yeah. If you're trying to get into that market, there's a lot of places you could start. And there's people who have already cracked halfway in or who are straddling that line who are probably looking for other partners to extend what they're doing.
Yeah.
And you guys have done a pretty good job of that at InBrilliance from my understanding of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happens a lot more naturally. Some of the tools that we have are just, they don't exist in other software suites. And so people want these automated tools that don't exist somewhere else. So we often end up as someone's second suite of software, which we have no problem with, especially in the commercial world. In the home world, it's usually their first suite of software. In the commercial world, we are sometimes their second. Or what we also have, just like Terry said, we've got a ton of people who grow from, you know, prosumer home equipment to prosumer equipment to commercial equipment. But learning a new software and figuring that out is difficult for them. So we've added more and more commercial features to what once was a more home-driven software because they want to use it on their same equipment. And because honestly, the file is the file is the file. In the end of the world with this thing, we can run our files on commercial equipment as easy as anything else. I've used all of our programs to make things that I've sent to full commercial production. Before I became more involved in Brilliance, I had already made commercial production stuff out of their software. To what we're doing now. And I'd say the other thing to notice is that, like we talked about people going from the bedroom shop to the multi-million dollar shop, there's also a host of people who find a little niche where they make enough money doing either solopreneur stuff or side hustle, whatever it is, to happily be doing a smaller version of the commercial world and still be successful to the degree they want. And I think there's nothing wrong with that either. And those people exist. And there's a ton of them. Yeah, and that's still a market that needs to be served. If you slot yourself into that space and know how to serve them, you can make it quite lucrative.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll add to this, and this is just a personal observation that is kind of very direct. A lot of people who are in that crossover space or in the craft space, they look for content that is project content. I call it project content. It holds your hand a little bit more than the commercial stuff we do. We usually teach technique content. Yes, you make something cool at the end of knowing all your techniques, but we teach to the technique. The way that it's different in the craft market is we teach to the literal object being made. Like, I'm going to show you this shirt with this graphic, and we're going to go through the entire process to go from this graphic to this shirt, and here's all the stuff you need to make it. It's almost like a DIY kit version of content. And if you have something that's compelling for your decoration, they come in wanting to literally make the one cool thing, and the technique sneaks in as you teach. And it's a different method of teaching. And I think that we in the commercial world, we're like, nope, I've got a standard operations manual and I'm trying to get you through the process of knowing this technical thing. I'm definitely guilty of this too. Cause I've always said like, I don't want to do project stuff. I don't just want to walk them through something so they can paint by numbers their way through it. And then I realized like, well, the technique kind of sneaks in. And if you show them the cool, and also what do I do to every customer is go, hey, check out these cool samples. Don't you wish your samples looked like these ones? It's the same thing. Sometimes people don't come in with the vision. They come in knowing they want something cool. Then the vision comes from them getting attached to the thing you make.
Yeah.
So we just have to think about where people are coming from and meet them there if we want to be more visible with those groups.
All right. We're going to get well into bonus time here. Terry, that was on me. I asked the additional question. So that one.
We can tie it up and at least get done.
We can. Let's wrap this up here, Terry. So I want to throw this to you first, Terry. So what are the benefits for our industry, right? So that person that calls and complains and you walk them off the ledge and it's going to be okay and you've patted their back, right? What are you telling them that the benefit to having this quote unquote influx of crafters makers into the spaces?
Well, for me, I think that new ideas are always a plus to the industry, because one of those crafters is going to figure out something super cool and we're going to look at it going, oh man, I could do that, but I could do 500 of them an hour.
Yeah.
So, I think, new ideas and think of it like this, you know, and I always get inspired and, you know, I'm going to refer to my screen printing classes again. They're so excited. It's just like they want to take on the world and it gets you excited, you know? And so I think these guys fit into that. They're so excited about, look what I learned to do. And look at the twist I made on it. And you're like, oh, that is very clever. That's a money-making idea. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let me borrow that. Yeah, I love that. So I'll just real quick and then throw it to you, Eric, because I'm going to actually steal what you said earlier in that, you know, get them under your wing, right? There's some symbiotic relationship there, the trade-off, right? I also hear these same quote-unquote professional folks saying they hate the small orders, the one-offs. You know, that just ruins their production flow. Okay. Well, guess what? That Cricut mom might be the perfect partner if they're putting out quality work still, and yet they only want to do the one-off stuff. You send that to them. They send the big orders to you. Everybody's happy. So I think that's another benefit. But what about your thoughts, Eric?
A couple different things. I'm going to extend that taking under their wing even further and say that sometimes those people in your space that are in the craft prosumer market make really great employees down the road too. You may find that they really love the process because a lot of them come into it because they like doing the thing. They may not love the business around it. Yeah. And if you can find those people, they make incredible technical, you know, because they are amateurs in the classic sense of the word in that they love the thing they're doing. They will come into your shop and you can then teach them standard operating procedures for your shop, but they already know about the process, the decoration itself. So that can actually
and they have that entrepreneurial spirit to figure it out too. Right. So
if they aren't necessarily the best at the business portion of it, you could then stick them into the production side of this thing and get quite a lot of value for both of you. They get to run the big equipment and you get to have somebody who really wants to know how to do this stuff. I mean, that can be part of it. And also, we also introduce people to what we do, because there are some people who might not have ever wanted, let's say, an embroidered patch until somebody makes them one off of their home machine. And then they're like, they go back to ask that person, hey, cool, my company wants to do it for, you know, X promotion. And now they've got 200 to make. And maybe they don't even know about how to outsource that. And then they have to come to us to figure that out. Or they want direct embroidered on hats. They had the patch done, but now they're like, oh, can you embroider on hats? And that is one of the hardest things for prosumer equipment to do. And so it might come out where they go, yeah, I can embroider you a patch, but you want 50 hats. Now I'm not really there. Well, they've got to find somewhere else to source that. And if you've got a friendly relationship out there, or if you're out there messaging that and you're not opposed to dealing with folks, then they come to you and it's there. And also, I just got to second everything Terry said about new blood bringing in creativity. And especially the funny thing, especially in the embroidery world, I'll say this. The crafter market uses more materials, different types of materials, more threads, more creative use of those materials. They use all the stabilizers that are available, whereas a lot of the commercial folks, we use one or two kinds and that's it. I mean, that's mostly it's because it's economies of scale, but sometimes they can solve problems that we can't. Even though we sometimes see bad work coming out of that sector, you definitely see creative work and expansive work that really only comes from somebody who's noodling until they learn. That's great. And honestly, just the availability of all the stuff that they've got because they're a hot market that's worth money means they've learned a lot, quite frankly. It's not going to be everybody, but we've all hired for a traditional shop before or been around people doing it. How many of your people were sure deals? We've all hired duds. We've seen people who come in who've been, or people who have been being traded from shop to shop in a town forever so that they've worked at every print shop there is, we all know that that's not a done deal, and that just because you've been in the commercial mill that you're going to be great either. I don't think there's more risk. I think there's mostly more upside to it if we find the right people, but that's on us. You know, that's on us. And as I said previously, if we are to be good stewards and to make them good stewards, then the concept is to bring people in, be cool, teach as best you can, and then understand that there are these possibilities, like Aaron, like you said, for symbiotic relationships and in general for us to make a successful go at this thing without it having to be, you know, those darn cricket moms or the people with their little single meal and writing machines. We should understand where we all fit and then make the best of it. There's a lot of upside if we want to find it.
Yep. All right. Well, Terry, is there anything that we missed, or we want to go ahead and wrap this up?
I think we have covered this
run it down.
In quite good depth.
Yes, quite a bit. All right, Eric, what do you got coming up here?
Well, the big thing I'm going to go ahead and share with everybody is just DAX Chicagoland is coming. Obviously, you're going to see me on the take up. I'm not going to announce stuff because I'm still efforting on some stuff going on. So we'll see topics as they come up. But I want to talk about DAX Chicagoland just to make sure everybody knows April 19th and 20th. It's closer than you think. It sounds like it's far away, but it'll sneak up on you. I'll be teaching back to back on the 20th. Covering vintage values and digitizing details. So head over to daxshow.com to get in on the fun. That's the last time I will probably be teaching that vintage values class, at least for some time. There probably won't be another one of those coming. So if you had wanted to see me teach that, that one probably gets retired for a bit and has to be updated after this. So I would go ahead and get out there. Since that was one people asked me to take on the road, I'll say, hey, last chance, get out to the Chicagoland area and see us over at DAX.
Eric, I actually overheard a couple of guys sitting in the back of my class as I was talking to somebody else after the end of it, and they were talking about going to your vintage values class, and they were so super excited about it. So
hope they actually liked it, since you were before me.
I'm sure they did. All right. Well, you guys make sure you head over to ericcampbell.com also and check out all of the great content over there, from the take up to everything else that Eric does for the industry. So Eric, thank you very much for your time here today, sir. We appreciate all of that depth of knowledge that you brought to this conversation. So high five, man.
Now off to the control room.
Now
away with you. Get back and push the buttons. All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Awesome. Terry, what about you? What's coming up, man?
My complete screen printing business course. I'm going to be at Workhorse Products in Phoenix, May 4th and 5th. My next class in Chicago at Atlas Screen Supply will be June 8th and 9th. I'm speaking at the Impressions Expo in Atlantic City this afternoon with my presentation, Everything You've Heard About DTG and DTF Printing on the Internet Is Wrong. And all my upcoming events you can find at terrycombs.com. How about you, Aaron?
I'm sorry that I'm going to ruin that seminar for you, but we're going to clean up the internet. No, I'm just kidding. All right. For me, I just want to make sure to share with folks, make sure that you check out the our Success Group Facebook page, Facebook group that's out there. So it's been a great discussion over there. So it's called Falling in Love with Your Business. So Fall in Love OSG. If you go to facebook.com/groups and Fall in Love OSG, we kind of have this idea or thought that every question is worth asking and everyone's comments and feedback matters. So if you're facing challenges, you need some advice, or you just want to celebrate some successes, we love doing that over there. You will find this to be a very welcoming space, and share your journey and learn from fellow entrepreneurs that are dabbling through their journey, not dabbling or doing whatever it is that they're wherever they're at, right, is perfectly fine. So got that out there. So make sure you check that out. As Eric mentioned, DAX Tinley Park is right around the corner. As crazy as that may sound, we're already through the last DAX show of the year nearly. So I do have two classes over there, Fundamentals of Pricing Your Printing and Fundamentals for Small Business Growth on April 19th. So check that out over at daxshow.com. And then as we noted earlier in the promo there, the Fundamentals of Business Success live event is happening June 7th and 8th. So if you're looking to be more fulfilled and connected to your small business and you want to walk away with the foundation that is going to lead you to success, this is something that's never been done in our industry, a real mindset related, but also the nuts and bolts of building your business foundation. This small business retreat is for you. So osg.link/funlive will get you to the details and get you signed up because the space is limited. We are making this as intimate as we possibly can. That way we can get everybody built up in the right way. And then stay tuned for more coming up from me. I've got Graphics Pro Expo in Long Beach, California, not too far away. So tune in for that. And if you have not already got your copy of the book, you can check that out over at osg.link/FBS. So, Terry, we are well into bonus time, but we've got some secret sauce here. And Dane said he's got a lot to cover here. So are we ready to dive into the secret sauce?
I'm ready to hear some Cajun secret sauce, Dane.
Oh, delish. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. Dane Clement here with Stalls. You know, my whole career I've worked with raster files, right? And one of the biggest no-nos about raster files has always been, well, you can't upsample it, right? Don't make it any larger than it is. If you're going to create the artwork, make sure you have it high enough resolution at that beginning stage, and then you're good to go. While all that is true, these days things are a little bit different. You got a little bit more flexibility. So if you've ever messed around with any AI application, right, Midjourney or Ideogram or Leonardo, DALL-E 3, any of those things, it's going to typically generate an image that is about 1024 by 1024 pixels. And you can take that and upsample it. Some of those apps allow upsampling built inside of it. I'm just going to cost you some tokens or some, you know, iterations or whatever. Everybody's got a different word for that piece of it. So you either have to pay more for that, or you can have another sideline upscaling application, right? So what I'm going to do is, there's a bunch of free ones out there, and I've played with a lot of them. And what I don't like about the free apps is the fact that you're typically working on the cloud, right? So you have to take an image, upload it to the cloud, and wait for it to start crunching and enlarging. The problem with that is sometimes you're waiting for a long time in the queue with everybody else because it's free and they don't care about speed, right? So you can spend, I mean, I've been almost up to 20 minutes a couple of times, and that's just ridiculous. So there is a free version I'm going to show you right here, which I think is absolutely awesome. The only difference is you download it to your computer and it uses the CPU on your computer to crunch and upsample the artwork like locally, right? Not through the cloud, so it's a lot faster. And it is a free app and it is fantastic. And I will show you, the one I use mostly is a paid version. It's from Topaz. It's Gigapixel or, the AI photo. I'll get the whole app. So I think the paid version that I use, I think you can get it for like $100. I paid $200, I think, for all of the other software pieces that go into Photoshop as well. So, I wanted the full suite of things, but you can get just the upsample. I think it's about $100 and it's awesome too. And it's all resides on your computer. So you just get in, take that image and load it on in. So let's go ahead and I'm going to show you, really quick. Just, it's super fast and super easy. In fact, both of these, applications have a lot more tools and things that you can do and use with them. I don't use any of that stuff. I just upsample it, boom, I'm done. If I want to do any changing or cleaning or color adjustments, I'm doing all that in Photoshop anyway. So just to show you how that works, I'm just going to show you my workflow process. If you want to find out all the other stuff, you can check those out for yourself. But let's go ahead and dig in. All right, so right here I have the free version, right? So this application is called Upscale, and it's spelled UPSCAYL, right? So this is a new version. I just uploaded it because I noticed the last time I used this, they had an upload available, right? Or an upgrade. So basically, the stuff here on the left-hand side, I'm going to upscale it. I don't even fool with the settings. I just leave it as default. I'm not doing any batches. I can select an image this way, or I can just come over here and drag and drop it into the application itself. And remember, this is working on my computer, not on the cloud. So I can select my model. So if I click on that, if I'm doing a photo, okay, maybe I'll do a photograph type of thing. But mostly what I'm going to do is I'm going to upsample any AI-generated artwork. So I'm going to leave it on digital art. I can set the output folder, mine set, as you can see there, to my desktop, which is fine by me. And now all I got to do is, I can see here, I'm going to upscale from 1024 to 4,000 pixels. Now, the new version, see this thing right here, it says double upscale. If I click this button, it's going to basically run twice. It's going to upsample it, and then it's going to take that image and upsample it again, and it's pretty darn good. And we may take a look at that here in a second. So I'm going to go ahead and, I've just got it, I don't have that checked, by the way, right now. I'm just going to go ahead and click on the upscale, and it's going to start crunching. All right, so you can see it's processing right now. It's processing local on my computer. And the new version has this little lens, right? You can change the size of this lens. So if you notice, let's just, let's focus on this right eye here. If I move this lens away, you can see how it's kind of fuzzed. That's my original. It's not so clean. And now if I mouse it over this lens, it's cleaned. And see the left like there? So that's one way to set it up. Or you can come over here and click on this little flyout menu thing here. And I can use the slider view. You know, it's funny because this is how the software has always been set up before. And I kind of like this mode a whole lot better. So I'm just going to do this. So now I can literally just drag it, my window here from left to right to see. And just look here, like the side of his head. You can see it's sort of fuzzy and kind of, you know, wispy looking. And this just super cleans it right on up. So that's what the software is doing. If I bring my, this is finished here, by the way, when you see it here and it gives you these access tools to check it out, it's already done. So if I, for instance, go to my original, this is the one I dragged in. If I check out that information, it's 1.3 megabytes, right? That is a 1024 by 1024 pixels. That's what the AI generated. So now if I'm going to come here and look at my upsample, that one now is 4,096 pixels by 4,096 pixels. So what does all that stuff mean? Well, it means this. If I grab this one and bring it into Photoshop. Okay, so here we are in Photoshop. And if I take a look here, I can see I'm at 56 inches by something. So if I go to image size, 56, almost 57 inches by 72 pixels. But if I change this to 300 and I make sure my resample checkbox is unchecked, I got a file right now that is high resolution at 300 pixels per inch. At 13.653, right, which is almost a little bit better than 13 and a half inches. So I'm going to hit OK, and there I go. So I got a high enough resolution. I can do anything I want to do with it, and it's pretty slick. So one more thing I'll show you about this free upscale one here, right? Let's go ahead and double this guy. So I'm going to hit the upscale folder here. It's going to start crunching, and it should crunch again. There we go. So it's basically just going to run it two times back to back. The second time takes a little bit longer, obviously, because it's working on a larger resolution file on the front end. So we'll go ahead and take a look. Once this finishes crunching, we'll check that out in Photoshop as well. All right, we're just about ready. As soon as it finishes up here, we're going to take that image from my desktop and go check it out in Photoshop and do a comparison there to the one we just did. So here we go. Now look at this sucker. It's like 223 inches or so. That's crazy. So let's go to image size, and go ahead and plug in my 300 pixels, my high resolution file. Now look at this thing. This thing is 54.6. So it's a little bit over 54 and a half inches by 54 and a half inches. That is ginormous. All right. So let's take a look at it. Looks pretty clean. Looks the same to me, just super clean and super huge. So, this is a killer software. You guys go check it out. Now, next thing I'm going to do, let's take a look at what it looks like inside a paid version of Gigapixel from Topaz. Okay, here we have Topaz Photo AI open. I'm going to grab my same image that we worked with just a second ago, drag it into my main window here, and we get this, right? So it's going to show us like a before and after this way. All I'm looking to do, I don't want to add in any enhancements, but if you do want to do those kinds of things, if I click on this enhancements, it allows you to remove noise, sharpen it, all kinds of stuff, right? I don't use any of that. Again, if I'm going to use most of that stuff, I'm probably going to just go ahead and do it in inside Photoshop. But I can upscale it. I can go 3.3 times. I can go 1, 2, or 4 times. The 4 times would be equivalent to what the upscale did, right? It goes to 4,000 plus pixels. And I can do a maximum here. So this maximum is not quite as big as the free version of that upscale, but I'm going to go ahead and do it so we can compare those. Because again, this four times is going to give me the same thing, 4,096 pixels, I believe, like upscale did. Let's go ahead and do the max. Good. Save that image here, save it here. And now it's going to process. I'm going to take this file. We'll open it up in Photoshop. I just look at the maximum that this paid version can do as comparison. So remember that other one was like 54.5 inches, a little bit bigger. We'll see what we got here in just a minute. All right, so now we got like 85 inches there at low resolution, by the way. So let's go to image size. Again, I'm gonna make it 300 pixels per inch. So you can see we're almost at 20 and a half inches. So 20 inches, well, 20.48 inches. So if I hit okay to that, I'm at 20 inches by 20 inches at 300 pixels per inch. That's enough to print just about anything in our industry. So you can see as we mouse around, it looks quality's the same, but you got to pay for this one. So it sure looks like that new version of the upscale free software might edge it out, right? If you want to do those extra things, then I think maybe the paid version is the way to go. But comparing those two, you see the results for yourself. It's pretty slick, pretty good stuff. So that's all I got for Secret Sauce this week. We'll do another one soon. Thank you for sticking around.
All right. That was some delicious Cajun sauce there, Terry. You were exactly right. So
awesome as always, Mr. Yeah. Dane Clement.
Yep. Thank you, Dane, for being the Two Regular Guys art guy, but definitely check him out over there at stalls.com, or you can actually go to daneclement.com and find out more about Dane and what he's got going on and where he's traveling about the world, et cetera. So Terry, wow. What a show today. What a great conversation. We were like, huh, do we get enough for a show with this idea? And I think we pulled it off. So thank you, Eric, for all of your details and all of the depth there. We want to just send a huge shout out to Eric for bringing in all those great concepts and ideas that we got to dig into in some depth here today, Terry.
Exactly right. And we also want to thank Eric for being our show producer, being backstage, pushing those buttons and turning those knobs and wheels. And I don't know if he really has all those things, but I like to think that he's back there turning knobs and wheels. Yes.
pounding on the come on, StreamYard, let's go. I love it. Yes, thank you, Eric, very much. All right, well, tune in for next week. It's still to be announced. We are efforting, and I think we've got some things lined up, but we're not ready to quite announce it here yet, but stay tuned. That will be coming to you soon. So right back at the same exact time, Friday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern time, 8 a.m. Pacific time, and we will see you back here next Friday.
All right, until then, I'm Terry Combs. He's Aaron Montgomery.
And that was the Two Regular Guys.
Here we go. We're out.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to Two Regular Guys. Check out our website at tworegularguys.com. That's the number 2regularguys.com. You can also interact with us over at our Facebook page, facebook.com/tworegularguys, or send us a tweet, twitter.com/tworegularguys. And we have a YouTube page. You can find all that from our website, tworegularguys.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to spending some time with you again next week.